team with high hopes and high expectations deserve high-quality coverage.
Matthews with a shot, score! Marner, score! Wee Willie Nylander!
Good thing you've come to the right place. You're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
And across the line, Marner to Matthews, backhand, rebound, score! Bunting is able to clean up the garbage. Bunting bunts it into the net, and it's 3-1. Rangers are back in business again. All he had to do, he was a foot from the blue line. Centering pass, scores! And the Rangers have tied the game at 3.
Another two-goal lead blown from the Leafs' standpoint.
As the puck is hammered off the boards towards an empty net, and in it goes.
And a comeback win for the New York Rangers. And the Leafs' defensive woes continue.
I just thought we got exposed today for being a team that was just soft. Soft and purposeless and just kind of playing the game and just hoping it was going to work out.
They're not leaving today because they have to play the Islanders on Saturday. Tough one for the Leafs last night, AB. The Leafs give up another multi-goal lead. They lose 6-3 to the Rangers at MSG, and they had that 3-1 lead again after one. Julia Tesheri, Al's brother Mike DiStefano with you as always. Some pretty... I don't know if I've ever heard such loaded comments from Sheldon Keefe after a game.
Warranted, though, no?
I don't know, think? Soft and purposeless. I don't know. I don't know if it's... I don't know. You go ahead, and I'll share my thoughts after.
I agree with Sheldon Keefe. I mean, they were soft last night. It seemed like they were playing contactless hockey. But, like, look at Ryan Reeves and both of his goals. They were just trying to skate away from him. They weren't laying no body. I know it's tough to do against a guy who's, what, 6'4", 230
pounds. Hard forechecker, yeah.
But the forecheck in general really, really played a factor into the Rangers game last night. Like, any time the forecheck came in, whether it was Kreider or it was Reeves or Kevin Rooney, no matter what player it was coming in, they're pressuring the Leafs defense, which was thin already, and it caused a lot of turnovers, and those turnovers ended up in the back of the net. I think soft is definitely an adjective that I would use to equate the Maple Leafs last night. Just look how much they were out-hit yesterday, 31-12. Were the hits last night. And I was listening to Ryan Reeves also after the game, his post game, and he said, like, I think we out, you know, our physicality was a bit too much for them. And he noted the fact that they had more than doubled them in the hits column. And, you know, 8 giveaways last night for the Maple Leafs. You look at most of the goals coming off of those giveaways. I agree with Sheldon Keefe. It was not a very good performance outside of the opening, you know, 16, 18 minutes. I guess we'll give them the first period, let's say. But the second and third, it was a very poor outing for the Maple Leafs.
Right, they were missing a couple of their most physical players in Nick Ritchie and Jake Muzzin. So of course that's going to be a factor. I think where I take Nick Ritchie's a body. We're not going to sit here and say Nick Ritchie doesn't lay hits.
But the fact that Nick Ritchie came out of your mouth before Jake Muzzin is funny. But didn't you? I realized last night how much I actually do miss Muzzin.
100%. Muzzin and Hall is their second pairing, and that's where I take a little bit of issue with Sheldon Keefe's comments after the game. Sure, they were warranted. Sure, they had a bad game. But he went into this game saying, this is going to be a great learning experience for Liljegren and Sandin. They're going to be the second pairing. And specifically, he said, no matter what happens this game, they're going to come out of it better players. So he kind of gave them this leeway to, I don't know, try their best. Clearly, they had not a very good game. That pairing and the Dermott-Biega pairing got beat up on pretty badly. But Sheldon Keefe comes in and is like, have fun, boys. Learn some stuff. Doesn't matter what happens. And then after the game, he's like, soft, purposeless, bad. So I think that's where I'm like, okay, it might be a little harsh, but... not anybody's best showing last night, obviously, especially in the defensive zone.
Yeah, and
right back to the crease, right back to poor Jack.
And that's exactly where I was going to take this conversation next. And Like now, I don't want to say we're worried about Jack Campbell, but this is now a decent stretch of games where he's struggled since returning from the COVID Christmas break. He's got a .330 goals against and an .893 save percentage. Right, like yesterday, allowing 5 goals on 26 shots, and it was a 3.01 expected goal, so he allowed 2 more goals than was expected. He didn't play well last night. Granted, you know, he was left, you know, hung out to dry on a lot of those goals, and there was very poor defensive play. But Campbell in the past showed that he was able to mask some of that, but it seems like lately he's just not really coming up with the big save that he was getting earlier in the year.
Right, and Keith alluded, he didn't allude to that after the game. Do we have that quote directly, AB, or what was it specifically? He said it hasn't been to the same standard, I think that's clear, or something to that effect in terms
yeah.
when he was talking about Jack Campbell's play. So Jack Campbell knows it. Sheldon Keefe knows it. I don't think I'm worried about Jack Campbell yet. The numbers at the beginning of the year were blown up. We all expected them to kind of trail to a more human level. And I'd like to think that that's what we're seeing now. Let's bring in our buddy, Craig Button, TSN hockey analyst, our director of scouting at TSN. Craig, how's it going?
It's going really well. Now, I have to ask you this question, Julia. How much cross-country skiing did you get in on Monday, Tuesday, even yesterday? And more importantly, AB, did you get any cross-country skiing in?
Absolutely not. No, Craig.
I didn't either.
I don't think I left my house either of those days.
Well, downtown Toronto had snow, Julia. It wasn't like you couldn't go take out the skis and just go touring around.
I saw someone doing that on Twitter. Someone posted a video of a person with cross-country skis. The unfortunate, I don't actually own cross-country skis. I'm a renter. So next time there's a snowstorm, I'll have to acquire a pair because that guy who was skiing around downtown Toronto seemed to have life figured out on Monday. He was the guy.
I don't think I've ever strapped on a pair of skis in my life, to be honest with you. Like,
really?
I've never had the opportunity to either. I don't know.
We got to write that down for you in O-Dog.
Yeah, that was one of the events that people are thinking. No, that Olympic event where you cross-country ski and then you shoot the targets, someone brought that up. I don't think it's going to happen, but somebody brought that up, and I'm like, I've never even worn skis. How the heck am I going to be able to do that? I don't know. You a skier, Craig?
I am. I cross-country ski and downhill, and O does the downhill part too, so he's got an edge on you there.
He does.
And, you know, he was a different kind of shooter in the NHL and a pretty good one. Right, but I would imagine with that kind of eye-hand coordination that he would be a pretty good one with the biathlon rifle in his hand.
Yeah, not a fair one, I think. Not a fair one for myself.
We've got our TSN hockey analyst, Craig Button, on the phone right now. Craig, Leafs dropped another one last night. They've had a 3-1 lead in 4 of their past 5 games, and their opponent has erased that lead every single time. So, I don't know. This gets blown up because of the Toronto thing and the blowing leads thing. Everybody's very sensitive about it here. But can you break down why are the Leafs struggling to hold on to a lead lately?
Well, it's not lately. It's happened at previous times. And here's what I'll say to you both, is that, you know, in those 4 games, think about who they played. They were playing good teams, and good teams know how to take advantage of you. And the Toronto Maple Leafs have not demonstrated to me that they can play situational hockey very well. Understanding that, like, hey, we got this game under control. You know, keeping a game under control, we're up 3-1, we're up 4-1. I don't use the term protect the lead because that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about saying you're not going to get a chance. We're not going to do anything that's going to give you a chance. And, you know, you hear it all the time, you know, with football. And I don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs do very well with situational hockey. I think they have a game plan. They know how they want to play, but they continue to play the same way and it gets them into problems. And I'm talking about, you know, there's times when you just need positional discipline. I know you want to apply pressure, and I know pressure becomes a big part of the game, but not all the time. You know, and I don't think they do that very well. Colorado, Vegas, St. Louis, and New York Rangers, all good teams. All good teams that are saying, okay, you're going to give us a chance to get back into the game. We're going to take advantage of you. Daryl Sutter told me this years ago about Chris Chelios. And it's an individual example that applies to the macro. He said Chris was so smart, and he would understand. He said, we're on the road. We got a two-goal lead, and we got to fly after the game. We got a game the next day. He said Chris Chelios would look like a defenseman that couldn't make a play, but he was making all the right plays. All he was doing was taking the puck, flipping it high, getting it out. You're not going to get a chance. I'm not going to put our team and our other players under unnecessary duress. And he said when the game was in the balance, Chris was right at the forefront of it, and he was initiating, and we were really good. But he understood that, you know what, 3-1's fine. 4-1's fine. 4-2's fine. I don't have to make it 5-2, because if I try to make it 5-2, it might be 4-3. And that's what, to me, the Toronto Maple Leafs have not demonstrated in a meaningful way to me.
My only pushback on that would be that earlier in the season, it did seem like they were pretty good at locking it down. They were having some good third periods. They were, 16-0 when leading after two up until a couple of weeks ago. So I don't know if I necessarily think it's been a elongated thing all season long, but recently it seems to have been an issue. And yesterday, Sheldon Keefe talked about how the team was just a little bit too soft and felt that they played purposeless. Did you agree with that assessment, and did that factor into the loss last night?
Well, purposeless, again, with purpose, what did they have? Almost 40 shots on goal. They had a 3-1 lead. It's a comment that's made by Sheldon. I don't know what the meaning of it is. Purposeless. Give me some examples, Sheldon. And, again, we're talking about four of the last five games, AB, all good teams. And, yep. And as you move along the season, right, teams are looking for what I refer to as the soft underbelly of your team. I don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs do very well in situational hockey. And they get exposed against good teams. I think it's a problem for them.
Yeah, that's what Sheldon Keefe. Sorry, go ahead, AB.
Well, I was just saying, it's a problem because what they've been playing recently are playoff teams, and these are the games that they're going to have to play that are going to mean a lot going forward when you're playing against them. I mean, the Rangers are a team that you could potentially end up playing down the road in a playoff game, and if you can hunker down and buckle down, that's where it's going to become a problem. To me, it's the teams that they're losing to right now and the teams that they're giving up leads to is the same type of competition that they're going to play come springtime when it really matters. And we know that that's been an issue here in Toronto for the last 5 years. Well, last 17 years, realistically. But specifically, the last 5 years, they've had first-round exits.
Bingo. You said it. I mean, when you're in the playoffs, you're playing against playoff teams. 16 teams are gone. 16 of the weak teams are gone. Doesn't matter anymore what you've done. I had this conversation the other day on Edmonton Radio, because they were talking about Mike Smith, and they were talking about his season last year. He played against six teams last year, and three of them were no good. So we're going to start talking about, last year, Mike Smith's record, which was good. Don't get me wrong. He performed really well against six teams, of which three were not very good at all. So that's what we're now going to say, that, you look at the Edmonton Oilers, and you're going to keep counting on that goaltending to get you back into it. And to your point, AB, that's exactly where the Toronto Maple Leafs have to be better. They have to understand it. And they have not convinced me. They have not shown me in any demonstrable way that they can play smart, solid situational hockey. And when Sheldon just comes out and says purposeless hockey, good, just throw words. What is it, mindless, soft? What do you mean? Tell me what you mean. We didn't make the right decisions. We weren't good on the puck. We didn't get body position. Who provides the purpose? Isn't it a coach's job to instill purpose in your team and to keep them, on track? It's amazing. One of the things, and I talked about this last week with Sheldon, it's amazing when they lose, all the things that, he talks about they didn't do. Better not let that creep in very long. That's how coaches lose credibility with their players.
in conversation with TSN hockey analyst Craig Button, and you know, you brought up the goaltending, and that was, you know, a bit of an issue the last little bit. Jack Campbell coming off a red hot November, he was a second star of the month, and maybe the best month of goaltending we've seen in my lifetime from a Maple Leafs guy. But since December 1st, he's had a fairly pedestrian 901 save percentage, a 315 goals against. Now, I'm not saying we're in panic mode here, but how should the Leaf fans kind of feel about what they've seen out of Jack Campbell of late?
Well, I think we all know how they feel. Like, it's like, you know, it's the ups and downs of a season. It's the ups and downs of a team's play where they showed, you know, real positive signs. And then, you know, now those signs aren't as positive. And yeah, you start to consider, okay, what does this mean? And why could this be the case? I mean, Jack Campbell, you know, is being asked to carry a significant load on a team right now that's loose. So you combine those two things, right? And I think it, you know, mental fatigue becomes a part of it. Physical fatigue becomes a part of it. You know, also the fact that the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, trying to find a rhythm, you know, that could be also a factor. But I think there's always a point where you look and go, okay, what do we have to address here? What's the one or two things with Jack that we got to address and help him, because it might be slipping, and then go from that. Because I don't think there's no crisis here, and if anything, you got to look at, you know, the injury to the backup, and you know how much can the health of Peter Mrazek and him being able to play games and alleviate some of that workload on Jack help. I mean, they all go hand in hand, but, you know, when you're losing and as you point out, the save percentage and some of the play that we've seen from Jack in recent games, yeah, you look at it, but now, you know, they have to dig in and work at the details and understand what those details are and try to hone them. And every goaltender goes through this, but I don't think it's any major cause for concern. Now, if it continues on for a number of more games, well, then you might have you might raise your level of concern, but I don't think that's the case now.
Craig, Sheldon Keefe went into last night without Jake Muzzin, without Justin Hall. Liljegren and Sandin slotted in on that second pairing, and before the game, he said, no matter what happens tonight, it's going to be a great learning experience, and these two are going to come out of it better hockey players. Obviously, a tough night for that pairing and for the pairing below them last night. But was last night a good indicator of just how important Jake Muzzin is to this team as a defenseman? And in addition to that, what do you think Sandin and Liljegren can take away from last night's game?
Morgan Riley and TJ Brody have played very well for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Jake Muzzin and Justin Hall have not played very well. Last year... That was a really good second pair defense. So we talk about Jake Muzzin. Like, there's been a lot of, I mean, Justin Hall said, Jake Muzzin has not been very good. He hasn't been, simply put. So the Toronto Maple Leafs don't have a problem. You're always going to have a problem when you scale defensemen or players up the lineup and ask them to do more than they're capable of. And, you know, put them under that. I think Rasmus Sandin is in a continuous process of his game improving and developing. And that's going to continue. That will be the case, you know, in the next games. And it's always going to be a learning process for defensemen. Timothy Liljegren, you know, he's found his way into the lineup as a good, solid third pair defenseman. But when you start getting scaled up the lineup against a really good team and some really good skilled players, sometimes it's not that you're not going to be capable. You just might not be capable right now. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, If the play of their second pair defense, Jake Muzzin and Justin Hall, doesn't improve, this is going to be a big problem for them. And back to what we talked about earlier, AB, it's going to be a big problem for them against good teams.
Right. For Jake Muzzin, I think last night what I gained from it is just how much more bite he brings to the team. And Ryan Reeves had his way with that pairing, had his way with a lot of the defense last night. And it wasn't just Reeves. You know, you saw Kevin Rooney getting in on the forecheck, and it seemed like those younger guys, those smaller guys, were just a little bit, you know, they struggled with the forecheck and with the physicality in last night's game. And that's the one thing that Jake Muzzin still does bring to it. That's the biggest element that he has on this blue line. And I just really felt like that was lacking last night. And I know he struggled this season, but to me, I saw it last night, and it was kind of like a, you don't know what you got till it's gone. And there was certainly a feeling that Jake Muzzin was a big absence last night on the blue line. That's how I kind of felt coming out of that game, at least.
Jake is always going to compete. Jake is a competitor. This, you know, just because you're struggling, just because you're not playing at the level that you've shown that you're capable of playing at, doesn't mean you're any less of a competitor. And Jake certainly is that, AB, and certainly will stand up to the challenges and everything. And when you're playing any team and you have that element on your side, it's something that can give you an advantage. So certainly something with Jake's absence, that part of that element was absent as well.
Oh, sorry, I thought you had it. Sorry. I'll take it here.
Me and AB are having communication issues, Craig, because we sit on Zoom and we're not sitting next to one another. It's so difficult.
All right, here's a question for you, Craig. We're talking about the blue line right now, and I think last night is an indicator, again, that this blue line needs an upgrade, some sort of significant upgrade, I would say. So if you're Kyle Dubas, how aggressively would you be pursuing a defenseman before the deadline? Would you be willing to give up significant assets to improve that blue line at any cost?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at your team, and the Toronto Maple Leafs are a good team. And I think that, you want to try to strengthen your group in areas that you look at and you say that other teams might be able to take advantage of. Back to good teams. The playoffs are good teams. So what I would say, if I'm looking at it, number one, identify what you need. I think they need some bulk and weight on the blue line. That's what I think they need. Anybody that thinks that you don't need some bulk and weight and some heaviness on the blue line, all I'm going to tell you is, I'll just give you the Tampa Bay Lightning as an example. If you don't think Eric Chernak and Jan Rutta were really significant to the success of the Tampa Bay Lightning, then there's no need for us to have any more discussion. You need a balance of types of players. It's not just one type of player. I don't think they have enough weight and bulk on the blue line. I think they might need two guys, not just one. I think they absolutely need one player like that. You know, yes, a Ben Chiarot type player. That's the type of player I think they need. And they might need two like that. So you look at your team and you try to understand, how do you maximize your team's potential right now? You're always managing the future and everything. So you ask yourself, what are significant assets? You know, everybody has a different definition of significant assets. You know, it's about knowing your prospect pool. It's about knowing who you have. I've talked about this. The Toronto Maple Leafs' best prospect at present time is Topi Niemelä. He's shredding the Finnish league. He's a right shot defenseman. He's 19 years old, going to turn 20 this year. So you start to look at him and you go, well, is that a player we would trade, or can we trade somebody off our team? Like, you know, and make a move. You know, it all depends, you know, how you see your own players, how other people see your own players as to what is significant. And so I think that the first thing is what do we need, and then what is the cost? The Toronto Maple Leafs have some good prospects in their system despite not having first-round picks. You know, Nick Robertson's still a good prospect. I talk about Niemelä. Matthew Nyes is a good prospect. He's going to play for the U.S. Olympic team. You have Roni Hirvonen, who's a good prospect. And you know what? I haven't even mentioned some other guys that – you know, people might think are really good. Amirov, who is their first-round draft pick,
yeah.
I don't have him ahead of the four guys I just named, but maybe the Leafs do, and maybe somebody else in the league thinks they are. So I don't, you know, when we talk about significant, one person's evaluation of significant might be the opposite of somebody else's. But I think you look at your team, you're always trying to maximize the potential of your team, and I think this team has potential, but they're lacking in that area on the blue line.
Craig, Ilya Mikheyev has 6 goals in 8 games this season. His agent, Dan Milstein, last night tweeted out a show-me-the-money picture that has since been deleted. What do you think about this new era of agent and their social media tactics of negotiations?
Yeah, I have no problem with it. I mean, is it a tactic? You know, you're always trying to gain an edge in a negotiation, no matter what it is. So it's a tactic. I think with the with players' contracts and as a manager, what you're trying to do is, and I always use the term, you have to have dispassionate assessment. And great, Dan put that out. That's okay. Is that gonna affect where I'm at? If I'm a manager, no. I'm going to look at it and go, okay, what does it mean? What do we think his value is? You know, what does the agent think the value is? Can we fit him in? Can we not fit him in and whatnot? And I honestly, Julia, I could care less about all that stuff. He can go take out a billboard and put it right up on the Gardener and say, show me the money. I don't care. And neither should Kyle Dubas. Like, it's no, like, that's not the way you work with in a negotiation. And if Dan or any other agent, that's what they think you have to do. You know, bottom line is you got to negotiate. There's a value equation, and does it fit or doesn't it? That's the dispassionate part of it, and that's where you better be. Because if not, you're going to run into factors that are going to contribute to you making a decision that shouldn't.
Do we lose him?
Oh no, AB.
I think we lost him. I think we lost them. All good. I think that Dan Milstein, when we look at the, is he there? Craig, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So we were just talking about the new agent's way of going about the new social media way of negotiating and negotiations. I'm not sure if you had more to finish your thought there, but I also wanted to quickly chat before we let you go here. I think we only got like a minute or two. But I did want to get your thoughts on the Montreal Canadiens and Kent Hughes' press conference yesterday. I want to get your biggest takeaway, your first impressions, and what you think maybe his first order of business should be.
So I don't know where you heard me finish on Dan Milstein. I don't care. He can put up a billboard on the Gardener. You know what? It's dispassionate assessment. You have to. There's a value equation, and either a player fits or he doesn't. You got to make. If you want to put in all these other factors and make it part of your decision making, you're going to make mistakes. To me, the value equation. Here's what it is. Here's what it fits. Comparables. Everything you go and move on. I don't really care what the agents do, or anybody for that matter, with respect to trying to gain an edge in negotiation. That is just something. It's a tool, something you're trying to gain. It would never matter, never did. Now, for the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, I've known Kent Hughes for a long, long time, and Kent is a bright guy. He's an intelligent guy. He's coming into a scenario in Montreal where, you know, the spotlight is bright, and, you know, the chair that he's going to be sitting in, can get heat. But Jeff Molson said, I want more voices in the decision-making process, not less. Jeff Gorton hires Kent Hughes. It's not stopping there. You know, they're going to have to add other players. They're going to have other people into positions that can really support them, Jeff and Kent, in their areas where they may be a little bit lacking. But, you know, Kent's well-spoken. Kent is intelligent. Kent has lots of experience in the industry. That was yesterday. It's not going to change one thing with respect to how you proceed forward in addressing the needs of the team and the issues that surround the team, because it matters today, tomorrow, and leading into the trade deadline and the draft to try to build a competitive team. But, you know, these are just steps along the way, and you know, they're far from completed in a lot of regards, but this is the direction the Montreal Canadiens are going in, and, you know, that's what Jeff Molson wants, and that's exactly what he's getting.
All right, Craig, really appreciate it. Actually, before I let you go, I do need to ask this question, because we got into this a little bit earlier, just before the show. We were having a conversation. We're doing our power rankings later in the show for the final segment, and we're discussing it's going to be the teams that we want to avoid in the first round of the playoffs. And Steph and I, producer Steph, were having a discussion if we should base the current standings based on points or points percentage. Where do you stand on that debate?
Well, here's what I would say. Go by points percentage if there's a wide gap in games played.
If you're kind of annoying.
It's statistically factual, okay?
Julia took the words right out of my mouth.
There we go. There we go.
So you're trying to be nice, Craig.
No, what do you mean try? I don't have to try. I am nice. Come on, AB. like other people might have to try. I'm nice. Anyway, honestly, if the games are close, if you're within a game or two of each other, go by points. If there's a wide gap, then go by point percentage.
Yeah.
You know what? There is a pretty big discrepancy between teams right now because of COVID and the break and the not break. So maybe you can have this round, AB.
Yeah, you got some teams that have played 10 less games than one
another. Yeah, okay. You can have this round.
Why don't we just narrow it down, okay? You want to do your thing, okay? Florida, Tampa Bay, and Toronto are close in games played. That's who they're going to play. You know, 2-3. So why don't you just look at those things and say, who would you least rather play, Florida or Tampa Bay?
Well, that's essentially what we're looking at. And if the playoffs started today, right? We're saying, if it started today, would you go based off of the points or points percentage? Because it depends on if you play Florida or Tampa in the first round. But that's a debate for another day. We got to fly here, Craig, but appreciate weighing in on it. I think you wanted to give me the nod, but Julia just had to get in there and get her say, which I don't know. I don't know what that meant, but
AB, I want to be very clear with you, okay? And as much as I like you and as bright as you are, I default to Julia's side because
she brought you a Persian. I get it.
And wait a second. She's bright. We work together in Red Deer. She braves the cold. She's got cross-country ski blood in her, right? And she brought me a Persian.
That's a lot of points, AB. It's just the Persian. Let's be honest. It's just the Persian. All right, Craig. Appreciate it. We'll chat again next week.
Okay, see you.
All right. Oh, what a guy. Craig J. What a guy. It's the Persian. Definitely is the Persian. All right, we gotta fly though. Coming up next, we are going to give you an update. We have an update on when the fans will be back in the stands here in Ontario. We'll tell you about that next. We still got the power rankings as well. I'm Mike DiStefano, aka Al's brother. She's Jewett to share. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Looking to take over your lease? What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com for more. AB, some good announcements from the government? That's always exciting stuff.
Yeah, so it looks like Premier Ford come out and he's been talking a little bit. Looks like gyms and whatnot will open up on January 31st, but we have an update on when we could see fans in the building. The Ontario government now announcing that they'll be easing the COVID-19 restrictions that will permit sports venues to return to 50% capacity starting February 21st. So on February 21st is when 50% capacity will be able to come back. And then they're also reporting that full capacity will be March 14th. So, good stretch of games toward the back half of the year where they'll have a full crowd, hopefully. But what I find interesting, and the Leafs have, 10 home games between now and March 14th. So, quite a bit of home games that they're going to have here they won't be at full capacity. But March 13th is an interesting date. And that's the Heritage game that was supposed to take place at Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton against the Buffalo Sabres. Supposed to be the battle of the QEW or whatever.
We're supposed to go, AB.
I know. I'm not sure what that means for that, though, because it's an outdoor game. But, that's an event that I think a lot of people were looking forward to at the beginning of the year. It's the first Heritage game that the Leafs have been able to be a part of. And it seems like, as of now, it's only going to be at 50% capacity because it's one day sooner.
Come on, Dougie, give it to us.
I wonder if they'll have an exception. What's the difference between
a day?
You know what I mean? I wonder. I'm curious. We'll kind of keep an eye on that, I suppose, over the next little bit. But good news that the fact that we have a couple of dates here, hard dates for when we should expect to see fans return to the building, and we can see Scotiabank Arena full again. And then we could start going back to these games as well.
Thank goodness. So many schedule updates because there is a schedule for February now, and it has...
Finally.
About a bajillion games, especially towards the end of the month. 5 games in 8 nights to end off the month of February. Already a short month and so many games for the Leafs.
Yeah, you know what, though? Like, it's not as bad as it could be. The 5 games in 8 nights isn't bad, but when you look at the matchups, really the only, like, teams that scare me at this point would be Carolina, the Blues, Minnesota, and Washington. The rest of these are very winnable games. And Pittsburgh. Right. We'll throw Pittsburgh in there as well. But the rest of them are very winnable games. And, you know, it's not going to be a tough schedule, it looks like. They do have to go on the road. They got to remake up that Western road swing where everything got shut down early. So February 10th, 12th, and 14th, they're on the road against Calgary, Vancouver, and Seattle. And then they're in Pittsburgh on the 17th, the Blues on the 19th, and then only one back-to-back, which I think is actually a good thing. I thought there would be way more.
Right?
I thought there would be more, too. So just one back-to-back, and it's against the Habs and the Blue Jackets, which not overly, you know, strong matchup. So hopefully that means good things for the Maple Leafs. Although, you know, they did lose to the Arizona Coyotes earlier this week. So you
that
never
happens.
Really know.
It happens.
But, you know, overall, I don't think this is as bad a schedule as I was expecting. It's a lot of games, but only one back to back. And it's for the most part against lower quality of competition, I would say. Not taking anyone lightly, but
definitely. Yeah, when I was looking through all the rescheduled games, I was honestly, as much as a lot of people dog on the NHL scheduling and things like that, I was honestly really impressed with. Can you imagine how much brain power it would take to have done this?
Oh, jeez. Well, there's some teams that don't
think about it.
Well, there's some teams that don't have as many games in February just because they didn't get hit by the COVID bug. You know, I think of a team like Anaheim. I didn't see exactly how many games they played, but I would imagine it's a much lighter schedule because they've already played 41 games. Like, they've had that stretch of 4 or 5 games more than any other team. And then a team like Ottawa, who is going to have to play a bunch between now and the end of the season because they're sitting at, what, 32 games right now? So it's interesting because it's going to be different for everybody. And that bill comes due. We talked about it when all these games were getting rescheduled. We're like, oh, you know, Leafs haven't been affected as much by all of these, and it's allowing them to rest up, but that bill comes due, and they're going to play a lot of games and not a lot of nights. Why don't we get back into last night's game and play a little Stay or Go?
Well, I suppose we should get going.
All right, everybody, stay right where you are.
Get the hell out of here.
No, you stay here.
You gotta get going, so go.
I'm sorry you came.
Time now for Stay.
Nobody got a gun to your head.
Or Go.
I'll be back.
I want you to stay.
I love that song. Every time. Good one. AB, you want to start us off with a stay? We'll both do stays first. We'll keep it positive.
Sure.
I feel like I say that so much.
Well,
I'm not actually this positive of a person. I'm talking myself into it half the time.
And it's a Thursday. It's not even Monday. One day closer to the weekend, I suppose. But there wasn't a whole lot of positives to take out of last night's game, if I'm being completely honest with you. I think the one big one that I could take is the fact that they started on time. Like, the Maple Leafs came out firing. They had 2 goals before the Rangers even had a shot on net. So the opening 20, they now, for the past few games, have really gotten the point where, you know, they're going out, they're establishing leads, they're playing well, they're starting on time, but we know what the problem is. It's keeping the foot on the gas pedal for a full 60-minute effort. But the starting on time, keep it up, because it's a lot easier to play. Well, typically it's easier to play ahead from behind, but at this point, I don't know.
Because it was the opposite issue at the beginning of the season. At the beginning of the season, our go was always start on time. Like, they're not starting on time. And
now
all of a sudden,
we were trying to ask the league for like 8:30 puck drops, because it took until 8:30 before the Maple Leafs started to get going.
And now by 8:30, they've packed it in. So it's always something. My stay is the top line playing amazing. I still thought that they looked great last night, despite the turnout of the game. Bunting is on a 5-game point streak, in which he has 5 points. Marner has 4 points in his last 2 games, 2 goals, 2 assists. Finally, we haven't even mentioned it yet because I didn't even like talking about it when it was a thing, but breaks that 100-game-plus power play goal drought.
Yes, he did.
He was also in the Lone Leaf last night to have a multi-point night. I thought he was the best player on the ice for the Leafs last night. He was looking crafty. He was looking shifty. And then obviously Matthews, even though his dreams of the longest road goal streak were dashed last night by the kicking
call. So close. I knew right away. I was like, nah, that doesn't look like that's going to stand.
Who even knows, though? Like, I thought that right away, too, but there's been some this year that have counted that I thought weren't going to. So I held my breath until it was no goal.
I wonder if the officiating knew that was a milestone goal, and if they had known, maybe would they have potentially?
Well, remember
maybe
the Colorado thing?
I don't know.
What was it? The Colorado goal? It was a franchise record of sorts, and it looked questionable, but it counted.
Yeah, you never know with these things. Anyways, what's a go for you from last night's game?
My go is the net front coverage. At the beginning of the season, you and I used to take a look at the heat map after games, and we'd really praise the Maple Leafs on how well they protected the front of their net, and even the range in which shots were coming from were from outside of the hash marks. They just kept teams to the perimeter very well. And maybe this is, like you mentioned, how much Jake Muzzin is kind of, you don't know what you got till you have to miss it. He's a big body in front of the net, and he does a good job of keeping it clear. But all of the goals last night for New York came from, inside the hash marks. And you mentioned how that the D-pairings were kind of overwhelmed by the forecheck. But as of late, the net front coverage hasn't been great, and it's something that we were really praising them on at the beginning of the season. So clean up in front of your house, boys.
It's been sloppy, and that's what they call it, right? They call it the house, right? The slot and inner slot area, and that's where most of the goals, if not all of the goals, were scored last night. So, that definitely is something that needs to get cleaned up. And for me, I got to also kind of go with Jack Campbell struggling. I'm not siren, there's no panic alarms going off yet, but just take a look at the splits from last night he allowed 5 goals on 26 shots, and a couple of them I think he probably would want back. But you just take a look at the stat pack that I got here from the first 14 starts compared to the past 14 starts. Had a 167 goals against average compared to the last 14, where he's down to just a 284 goals against, a 943 save percentage. Last 14, a 912 save percentage. So he's becoming a little bit more of a league average pedestrian type of goaltender, and that's not what the Maple Leafs can really afford right now when it comes to Jack Campbell. So his struggles, they can go, please and thank you. All right, we got to take another break here, but we got the power rankings coming up next, where we both will be going through and ranking the teams we least want to play in round one of the playoffs. So we'll get to that when we return. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Julia DeSherry. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here. Leafs Lunch Power Rankings, brought to you by WeatherTech.
Time now for our Leafs Lunch Power Rankings, brought to you by WeatherTech Automotive Accessories. Get the ultimate custom fit floor protection for your car, truck, or SUV. Go to WeatherTech.ca. Nothing protects like WeatherTech. Julia Tesheri, Mike DiStefano, bring it in home, AB. Based on points percentage, I'm just making fun of you. I don't know. We're going to power rank who the Leafs should most want to avoid in the first round. And let me preface this by saying, I don't even know after last year. Like, I'm looking at these teams, and I'm like, I don't know which one of these teams that the Leafs want, because I just don't know what they're going to bring when it comes to April.
Can none of them be the answer? Can we
literally
play
none
the
of them?
The Ottawa Senators, the Buffalo Sabres, could that potentially be a first round?
But you just never know.
Unfortunately, it's not. Well, I know it's not going to be Buffalo, but
no, I mean, you just never know. They could lose to Buffalo the whole Canadiens debacle.
Yeah,
sorry.
And look where the Habs are right now. Exactly. You're right. You do never know. And I mean, the last 2 years, they were supposed to win those series, both against the Columbus Blue Jackets and against Montreal Canadiens, and they didn't. They squandered those opportunities, and now they're in a situation where it's must win. No matter who their opponent is, it is must win, or I believe there's going to be some massive changes made this offseason. But why don't we get right to it? Why don't we talk about...
I feel so uncomfortable making this list, because I'm just not comfortable with any of these teams, but we have to do it.
We got to do it. We're ranking the opponents that the Maple Leafs should most want to avoid in the first round. Typically, we go 5-1, but I think in this case, it works best to go from 1-5. We both have a list here. Why don't I start off with my list, and then you can tell me how different your list is compared to my ranking. Okay, so for me, I think the Tampa Bay Lightning, the defending cup champions, are the team that I'd be wanting to avoid most. This is, to me, the deepest, best team. They've got the best goaltender in the world, and they know how to win the playoffs. I desperately would love to avoid them in the first round, if possible. And based on points percentage right now, they'd be playing the Lightning in the first round. So the Lightning, to me, are number one team to avoid. The second one, the Carolina Hurricanes. I think they're also a terrific team, extremely deep all throughout the lineup. A little bit of a different team that hasn't had the playoff success you would like. But, I mean, even the last couple seasons, they've won playoff games. They've proven they can win, and they're one of the best teams in the league. So, to me, I do want to stay clear away from that. And I think Florida's got to come in at number three for myself, too. The way that they're just beating on teams right now. And I'm curious to see what they're going to look like come playoff time, but this is another team that just seems like they can score at will, 5-6 goals a game. The Rangers. We saw last night what the Rangers look like, and this is a tough physical team that plays a playoff brand of hockey. I think they come in at number four on my rankings as teams that I would want the Maple Leafs to avoid. And then I got the Boston Bruins at number five. And some people may think that the Bruins should be higher on this list based on the demons that they've created within Maple Leafs Nation. But to me, if you can face Boston in round one and get that round one victory, the demon, like the what that would do for the thoughts.
Ultimate
of this
curse
like,
breaker.
Oh my Ultimate God. Like that's a monkey off the back bigger than Marner's 100 goal games without a power play.
Way
goal.
Bigger.
Like,
way be, bigger. That was what, barely a little chimpanzee. This would be a gorilla.
The confidence that beating Boston in a round one series that could propel them through a deep playoff run, I put Boston at number five.
Okay, so my list features the same teams, but in a little bit of a different order. Of course, I have the reigning Stanley Cup champion Tampa Bay Lightning at number one because they have won the Stanley Cup twice in a row, and I think that just that number one writes itself. My number two is different than yours. My number two is the Florida Panthers. I just have Florida and Carolina flipped. I've got Carolina at number three, and I think that's because even though that they lost to Tampa last year in the first round of the playoffs, to me, they feel like that was the best series to me, and they really proved that they could hang with a big dog in that series. It was my favorite series. And that series alone, that sample size, and I'm basing it off that sample size exclusively, they looked a little bit more playoff scary than the Carolina Hurricanes. And maybe I'm wrong about that. I have Boston at number four, and I have question mark, I guess, next to it, because I want to put them next to Tampa at number one just because of the demons that go with them. However, I suppose I can't put them any higher than Carolina, Florida, and Tampa, but they just have the playoffs figured out. They play really well in the postseason.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of scared of them. The Rangers, I have at number five because I know you said they play a tough playoff brand of hockey, but they've never actually, like, we haven't really seen them there. And although they do play, I don't know. I don't know how tough they are. I'm just looking at Ryan Reeves on the roster and saying, yep, tough team. So I don't know.
I mean, Jacob Trouba is probably the best open ice hitter in the game today. He had a hit yesterday on Morgan Riley, too, which
he's a murderer.
You know, like that guy is. He's just a murderer out there on the ice. I think they're a very physical team. I think the Rangers are someone that you would want to avoid. And look, the only way they will have to play one of Carolina or New York is if they end up outside of a divisional spot and end up getting a wild card spot where they'll have to cross over. But hopefully the Maple Leafs can kind of, you know, hunker down and have a strong back half of the season. So I think the goal is to win the division. Sheldon Keefe said the goal is to win the division. If you do that, you could probably avoid Tampa and Florida, and maybe you have to play, you know, maybe Washington ends up with the crossover wild card spot, or maybe it's Boston again who ends up with that spot, which to us are a little bit better than having to play in the state of Florida or the Carolinas. So I think we all just got to hope for the Maple Leafs that they have a strong back half of the year. Winning the division is definitely going to be a priority for this team, and we'll see. There's still a bunch of games to go. There's a long stretch to get it done. That's going to do it for us here today, though. If you missed any of today's show, you can find it on tsn1050.ca or wherever you get your podcast. I'm Mike DiStefano for Judith Tashiri. You've been listening to Leafs Lunch Gameplay with Matt Cause next.